Let's talk about death, shall we? In a way that we didn't used to be able to talk about it. You know, for most of the 20th century, mourning a death was a very private thing and very personal. You would do it with a small circle of friends and family at special times and special places, separate from our everyday lives. But University of Washington doctoral student Nina Caesar says social media have changed that. Because of Facebook and Twitter, now you're just confronted with death much more often.
And you're not just confronted with the idea of death, you're confronted with these traces that did belong to somebody at some point.
What do you mean by traces?
So when somebody, if somebody passes, they leave behind this profile, right? They leave behind this digital remnant, this record of their life that's very present and visible, and something that people can still even interact with in some way.
And you have studied how do we talk about death and mourning on Twitter, because that's different from Facebook, of course. So what have you found?
Yeah, I think my co-author has a point about this that I think illustrates it really clearly. And she says that mourning in Facebook is like going over to someone's living room, someone that you know, and sitting down with the close friends and family of the deceased and having a conversation about them. But on Twitter, you can imagine a neighborhood where everyone's doors are open and you can walk into any one of them and offer your thoughts about the deceased. You know, we can think about the network structure as being different. On Facebook, usually you know your Facebook friends offline. They're mutual connections. So when you friend someone, you have to feel confident they're going to friend you back. On Twitter, that's not the case. Network ties are directed. So you can connect with someone that you might not necessarily know offline, or you might not necessarily know if they're going to reciprocate that connection. You can even tweet at someone that you don't know. And Twitter's also suited to sort of information broadcast and diffusion, too, as well as social networking. So it's kind of this fluid, semi-public, almost semi-anonymous public space, right? It's not like Facebook, where it's kind of an extension of your offline network. It's more of a part social networking, part information diffusion space. And because of that sort of difference in publicness and that difference in site structure, we kind of expected to see maybe patterns of mourning emerging in this space that previous literature hadn't addressed yet.
How do we talk about death and mourning in the more diffuse space of Twitter?
We saw sort of three major themes emerge. One is that in some cases, people do use Twitter as a personal space, and we see comments from close friends and family, very personal, intimate communications and expressions of mourning, right? Sort of paralleling what's been done in Facebook and MySpace. We also saw reactions to sort of high-profile figures, people who maybe had some sort of following prior to their death on Twitter, because Twitter is sort of this broadcast space. It's a space where celebrities, scholars, politicians go to sort of create an extension of their persona. It's this public-ish space. And so people reacted to the deaths of these high-profile individuals by sort of commenting on their body of work, commenting on the significance that they had during their lifetime to that person, and using kind of more prosaic funerary language. But what we found most interesting is that we also found cases where private individuals invited strangers into the conversation. So a private individual would die, and something about the circumstances of their death would spark public interest and invite people to come into this space and comment on that. And oftentimes, even though they were acknowledged as an individual, the responses kind of linked their death to broader social issues like mental illness or like gun control. And it became a conversation that kind of extended beyond them and wasn't necessarily personal and intimate.
You mean here's another person who died of an accidental gunshot? I'm telling you this for a sort of a political reason?
Yeah, someone jumping into the conversation to offer some sort of opinion. Maybe they found out about that person through some other media site. For whatever reason, they got a hold of the Twitter handle or they searched for it, and they were able to sort of jump into that space and say, you know, it's a shame this person has died, but I think this is going to teach us something about issue X, Y, or Z.
So, Nina, one social media effect is I can experience the death of someone I know personally, and there's a whole lot of strangers commenting, for whatever their reason is, on the death of someone, that person that I knew. Have you studied or thought about what the consequences of that new reality could be?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's not one necessarily that our study addresses. I guess in response to that, I can sort of point out that within the context of Twitter, we're seeing these comments emerge, and we're sort of saying that they emerge within a conversation space, but this conversation space isn't necessarily a dialogue. So if we're searching for mentions of a person, we can kind of get this feed. It sort of has some sort of timeline. It often corresponds with important events in the life of the deceased, and it kind of ebbs and flows and follows themes. But this isn't necessarily people talking to each other or even seeing each other's posts. So when we look at these feeds, we often see conversations going past each other. So a comment from someone who knew the deceased and is engaging in some sort of intimate mourning connection with them, right next to a comment that offers some sort of almost a referendum on their decision making and the circumstances of their death. And I don't know if those people are communicating in some way outside of the context of this feed. It's possible that they are, but it's not necessarily a direct dialogue with one another. And that can kind of influence whether or not there could be repercussions on the people who did know the deceased.
I could imagine that being a more honest conversation than the one I'm only going to have with my family members and close friends. We're all going to talk about how wonderful the deceased was and, you know, a lot of comforting and not a lot of information. Whether I like it or not, it might be a more real interaction when I look at how people who aren't crying with me, you know, I see what they have to say, like it or not.
Yeah, and I think the sort of anonymity that Twitter offers, if you look at the profile of a Twitter user, it's pretty sparse. There's not a lot of personal information there. I think that anonymity kind of potentially invites people to offer more honest opinions on some of these cases, right?
Do you have any ideas about how that might change us?
I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard to sort of draw connections between what's going on in these spaces and what's happening in society as a whole. This could be very context dependent, right? But in these contexts, we're seeing this acceptability of public mourning, and there's always potential for that to sort of bleed through to other contexts as well. So maybe if it's okay to talk about the death of someone that you knew personally on Twitter, maybe it'll become more acceptable to sort of talk about that event with not just close friends and family, but acquaintances or coworkers. Within this context, I think we're seeing more of a publicness in our acknowledgement of death that we haven't seen in recent years.
Nina Caesar is a doctoral student at the University of Washington in the School of Sociology. She's thinking about modern conversations about death, and she co-authored a study on the subject, Death and Twitter, with Jennifer Branstad. You've been listening to KUOW's The Record.